And the mother of Jesus was there. And Jesus also was invited, and his disciples, to the wedding. And when the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what do I have to do with you? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water," and they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Draw out now and take it to the head waiter." And they took it to him. And when the head waiter tasted the water, which had become wine, and did not know it came from the servants who had drawn the water, although they knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man serves the good wine first, and when they have drank freely, which is poorer is served. You have kept the good wine until now." This was the beginning of signs that Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and a manifestation of his glory. And his disciples believed in him. After this, they went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and there they stayed a few days.
Good morning. This month, Mike and I are beginning a series of lessons based upon 6 miracles, which are found only in the Gospel of John. Now, when I hear something like that, I'm a numbers guy. Gary and I were just talking that I'm a numbers guy, and so I dug in a little bit. I found a couple different counts, but the one that I felt most comfortable with is that there are 34 recognizable miracles that Jesus performed that is recorded in any of the 4 Gospels. 19 are found in Matthew, 19 are found in Mark, 20 are found in Luke, and 8 are found in the book of John. So of the 8 that are found in John, only 2 are found elsewhere. This is a freebie I'm throwing in here. The only miracle that's found in all 4 Gospels is the feeding of the 5,000. The only other account that was found in at least more than one, or that was found in 3, was the walking on the water. Now, based upon the passage that Cliff just shared with us, we will be focusing on, actually, not only is it the first one in the book of John that is not found in any of the other Gospels, it is the first miracle that he performed publicly. That is the turning the water into wine. It is one miracle that I would say a non-Christian has a pretty good chance of knowing, because it involves drinking, and it, one that they would tend to maybe use as an argument to defend their drinking. So this is probably one miracle that is fairly well known. The first thing that we're told is that this happened on the first day, but it doesn't really account for when that counting began. If you look at the events that were covered in John chapter 1, we're told that about Jesus' baptism. And then through that passage, it says, "And the next day," and that's when Jesus meets Andrew and meets Peter. And then it says, "And the next day is when he met Philip and Nathanael." And then we come to this event in Cana, which says, "And on the third day." So it could just have been the third day from his public baptism. Other commentators did seem to think that this might have just been the third day of the wedding. I think that's unlikely because it says on the third day he was at a wedding. But it could have been the third day of the wedding and he had just arrived. But I think it probably relates to the chronological order that is laid out in John chapter 1 leading into chapter 2. We're told a few people are mentioned as being in attendance at the wedding, but the one that's prominently featured is his mother. I tried to do just a real quick search on how many times Mary is actually mentioned in the Gospels, but when you look up Mary, there's a lot of different Marys, and in this case, she's not stated by her name Mary. It just says his mother. So I didn't spend a whole lot of time on that, but I think the point that I'm generally feeling is that, you know, she's not mentioned that much in Scripture, and so this is one occasion where she is. Now, this part, this is another freebie I'm going to throw in. We're not told who's being, you know, who's getting married or who was married at this event. But the fact that his mother was there and later we're told his brothers were there, it likely was someone that they were related to that would have been why Jesus would have chosen to attend. And this is the free part. One commentator I found said that this was John the Baptist's wedding. Now, that's just really out there. I don't know where you even come up with that. But that part I wanted to throw in there just for free, that what some people will try to come up with for why he would be attending this wedding. The only other thing that we're told about the wedding itself is that some of his disciples had joined him there. Whether this was Andrew, Peter, Philip, and Nathaniel, who he had just learned about, or whether this was a larger group that had started to form, that had started to follow him around, but we are told that his disciples were there as well. Now, verse 3, we get to the basic story. We're told by his mother, Jesus is told that the wedding feast has run out of wine. It was not uncommon for these festivals to last many days, sometimes even up to a week. So if you maybe had a larger crowd and you were anticipating, or maybe you just were of meager means, or whatever the case may be, you had to make that stretch. And you oftentimes would dilute the wine as the week went on to make it last longer. And so that'll come into play here as well. But in this case, Mary brings to his attention that they are completely out of wine. If this was a family wedding, possibly could have been, you know, a source of family shame. You know, dishonor could have been brought upon the family if they ran out. Maybe that's why she was involved. I mean, if it's just someone else's wedding, why would she care? Why would she be concerned about it? But this also lends a little bit of credibility. This may have been a family wedding of some sort. Jesus responds, and I don't really feel that Jesus is being, I don't want to say mean, I don't think his response is such, what has this got to do with me? I don't think he's being reactionary here. He was saying, you know, in essence, it's not his wedding. Why is he to be concerned about this? But he clearly understands what it is she's asking him to do. We know this because of his response. My hour has not yet come. My time has not yet come. If this was purely an errand which she was giving him, go down to the store and buy some more wine and come back, that wouldn't bring about this type of a response. He clearly was understanding that she was asking for some kind of a sign. She is, in this case, expecting a miracle. But Mary is undeterred and just doesn't wait for a positive response from Jesus and instructs some of the servants that are there at the feast to do whatever it is that he tells them to do. So Jesus doesn't continue with his protestations, if that's the word, but he doesn't protest any longer, and he instructs them to bring 6 stone jars that previously were could have had some remaining that had water that was used for purification. John says each of these would have held between 20 and 30 gallons. I took the middle, being a numbers guy. I averaged down 25 gallons, this is 150 gallons of water that this could potentially be dealing with. Think about bringing home 150 gallons of milk in your, you know, in your shopping trip. Just think how much room that you would need to have. You need to have a pickup truck or a van to bring home that much. I mean, so this isn't a small amount that is being dealt with here. John mentions that this is water that was intended for Jewish purification. This is important for two things. One, it would have been ceremonial for their washing of hands, for the washing of utensils, for maybe even wiping down tables or furniture, anything that needed to be purified for Jewish customs. This is the purpose of the water. The other thing that we need to keep in mind is this is not water that was intended for drinking. And so there could be no confusion about its purposes of, you know, when it later was turned into wine. There couldn't have been anything accidentally put in there ahead of time, though much of the story would have, you know, refuted that anyway. But this is water that was destined or, intended for a particular usage, and that was for purification. So he asked that they fill these jars with water, whether they had water remaining in them from the purification or whether they were completely empty, it doesn't really matter. But he tells them to fill to the top, all the way up to the brim. And Jesus doesn't say anything further as far as, you know, instructions. All he does is he tells them to take a vessel, fill it from what was in the jars, and immediately take it to the master of the feast. We are not told, and I would think it would be against the purpose of the miracle, the master of the feast is not told of the origin of this wine that he is about to receive. In verse 10, we're told that when he did drink it, he was amazed. He comments that, you know, typically the best wine is served first at a festival. And over time, lesser quality wine is served. And I don't know that it's necessarily lesser wine, you know, quality, but as I said, they may take the wine they have on hand and they may start diluting it to make it last longer. But the first day or the first, you know, part of any feast, they would probably be using undiluted or the best quality. So in this case, it wasn't immediately apparent to the master that this wine was any different than some of the watered down or lesser quality wine that they had recently been receiving. We're not told that the servants had made any statement regarding it. And so his reaction after he consumed this confirms that this was a miracle. He was not drinking water. He wasn't exclaiming about this is really good water. He clearly mentions that this is wine and it's of good quality. In verse 11, we're told that this is the first miracle that Jesus performed. And then the passage continues by letting us know that at the completion of the festival, he goes down to Capernaum along with his mothers and his brothers and his disciples. So, once again, this is a story that many, many people are familiar with, for whether they have ulterior, you know, reasoning or motives for wanting to know the basis of the story. But I want to focus on a few lessons from this story, and then we will conclude. The first I want to focus on is his statement about his time having not yet come. We're told that this was his first miracle that he had performed, but I don't think we can look at what Mary asked of him and not just assume that she had some idea of his abilities. This was a miracle on a large scale. Many people were there and witnessed it. And I'm not saying while Jesus was home, he made the chairs move around the room and things like that. I mean, but just little simple things that something we even could have found in chapter 1. What does Nathanael, the interaction he had with Nathanael at the end of chapter 1, he says that here comes a man in which there would be found no deceit. And Nathanael goes, how do you know me? So Nathanael's admitting they've never met before. He doesn't know who Jesus is, and he's never been introduced to him. So the only way that Jesus would have known the character of Nathanael upon seeing him was through some supernatural way. I wouldn't call that a miracle, but Jesus had the power to be able to know these things. And I feel Mary probably had experienced such things before and knew of his power. And it was not a big stretch for Mary to think that this could be done. Now, his time not having yet come, some feel this is just a reference to this specific festival, that there was still some wine somewhere else, and, you know, you don't need me yet. Or I think that's a weak interpretation. The public ministry is really what is being referenced here. He had just been baptized, whether it was the 3 days ago, regardless, it was a short time right before this. He had not yet begun his public ministry. Until he did that, there would have been no need for miracles. And so Jesus here is saying, if I do this, well, then my time will begin. And so that is what has occurred here, because we know, looking at what happens in the chapters after this, he now becomes a public figure and doing these public events to draw people to him. Now, the next part I want to focus on is the actual miracle itself, the filling of the vessels. Jesus himself didn't fill the vessels. He didn't instruct his disciples. He didn't instruct his brothers. Mary is the one that said, you guys standing there with your hands in your pockets and, you know, not doing anything, do what he says. He didn't handpick these people who were filling the jars. There could have been no connection whatsoever based upon easily observable actions or activities that were taking place here that they had engaged in any kind of deception here. The quality, as I mentioned, was considerable. This wasn't wine that someone would have drank and said, yeah, this is about the quality that you would expect on this part of the festival. The master of the feast his statement speaks for itself, that this was wine of great quality. You would expect nothing less than a miracle from Jesus that the quality would be good. The servants would have known that they didn't put wine in these vessels. If they had been interrogated later about what had happened, they would be able to say, this wasn't even water intended to be consumed, and we filled it with water. I know we put water in there. We definitely didn't put wine in there. We were out of wine. And so, in this manner, the proof that Jesus had done, that this miracle had been performed, was easily verified through many, many people there at the festival. And then the last thing I want to focus on is verse 11. Verse 11 confirms the purpose of this miracle. By performing this miracle, it's demonstrating his power and the glory that he has in order to demonstrate his power. This power and his glory comes from the fact that he was and is the Messiah. He showed that not only did he have power, but that power had to come from not on earth, something on earth. It was divine power, and it would have shown that God had commissioned him to do this. This is a real miracle because water was placed in the vessels. There were many witnesses, but the outcome was that this was wine of tremendous quality. There was no deception. This was vessels that were used for non-drinking water. There wouldn't have been any, wine wouldn't have accidentally been put in there ahead of time, because this was purification, intended for purification. And it's proclaimed to be wine that the master feast, without his knowing where it had come from, gave the evidentiary statement that this was wine. But upon this miracle and the evidence that they generated, it was undeniable that this was something that not anyone could have done. And then the purpose is that people believed in him. Whether they did already, and then their faith was strengthened, or whether this was the first time they had ever engaged or had witnessed anything that Jesus had done, they now believed on him after not having been a believer before that day. And they now did. So this lays basis for not only this miracle, but it gives us the purpose for any other miracle that Jesus would have performed. It was done not for show. We're told a couple different occasions, especially on the day of his crucifixion, he was given a chance to basically do parlor tricks or, you know, use his power to entertain, and he didn't do that because that wasn't the intention of it. Miracles were done and performed so that people would believe in him, that they would use it as a proof of his deity and of his power. And this is just the one of, by my count, 34. The person who was down for the prayer is not here. Brother Jim Pugh, would you mind leading us in a word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed to our classes?